Good Wednesday, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming all around the world on the Game Nashville app. What's going on? Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson hanging out with you. Marquise is at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan, what's up?
How are we doing today, Chaser?
Man, I am doing well. I am. I had to think for a second. I was like, okay, what day is it? Wednesday.
Hump day,
that's right. So I had to think for a second, but excited to be almost halfway through the week. And we have another great show in store for you, including we're going to do a position-by-position breakdown with the Tennessee Titans. You may be asking, well, why are you doing this on May 20th? Well, number one, because we can. And number two, because I want to look at this year's team as currently constructed, and we know that can change between now and the end of training camp, and last year's team. And try and ask that question or answer that question. Are they better or do they still have some work to do? So we will do that here in just a little bit, but we can't get enough of The Last Dance. I mean, it's been a couple days since it wrapped up, and yet we're still talking about it, Ryan. And
it's, you know, a dance with a long song.
It is. It's like Freebird. I mean, it just keeps going on and on and on.
It's well played.
But it's giving us some good stuff to talk about. Now, we remember that there was a part in there that Michael Jordan and others were talking about Sam Smith's book, and that there was a snitch in the locker room, and they all said it was Horace Grant. And Horace Grant, you know, denied it in the film and all of that. But that was the guy that was pointed out to be the informant, so to speak. Well, Horace Grant went on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 in Chicago and was not very happy with any of this stuff, and basically unloaded on Michael Jordan. So three different clips for you. Let's start with the one that has been kind of a narrative with all of this, and that is Michael Jordan having the last word, the so-called documentary.
When that so-called documentary is about one person, basically, and he has the last word on what's going to be put out there. What's going to be put out there? It's not a documentary. It's his narrative of what happened in the last quote-unquote dance. That's not a documentary, because a whole bunch of things was cut out, edited out. So that's why I call it a so-called documentary.
Horace Grant, ESPN 1000. Ryan, your thoughts?
Well, a lot of people have thought that this is, a biased look at MJ's career with the Chicago Bulls. And while that may be the case, even if it wasn't biased, it would still be a heck of a documentary shedding light on one of the greatest athletes of all time. You know, I compare it to like a highlight film. You can make any Joe Schmo on any high school, college, or NFL team look like, you know, an All-State player, a Heisman Trophy winner, or a Hall of Famer on a highlight film. But when you have a highlight film of, say, Johnny Manziel in college, well, yeah, he was a Heisman Trophy winner because he was fantastic. You could find the best five plays of somebody at a different college, and he could look just like that. But my point is, whether it was MJ driven or not as much driven by MJ as it may have been, it was still going to be very slanted towards MJ because he's the GOAT.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you want him to do this, then you have to give him a little bit of control. Now, I thought it was well done. I liked it. Do I think that there were some things that probably were either shifted to favor him more or were just cut out completely? Sure, absolutely. But again, how else are you going to get MJ? He's not going to participate, and nobody cares if he's not involved in it. I mean, if, you know, you can get away with Karl Malone not being involved, but if MJ's like, nah, I'm out, nobody cares. Nobody wants to watch the Bulls, the 97-98 Bulls, without MJ. They just don't. So you have to make those type of sacrifices to get him in the film. So that I understand Horace Grant was saying that there were some things that were taken out. he goes on to give more thoughts on The Last Dance.
I would say, you know, entertaining, but, you know, we know who was there as teammates, that about 90% of it was, I don't know if I can say it on air, but BS.
Right.
In terms of the realness of it, you know, as I stated the other day, that it wasn't real, because a lot of things that he said to some of his teammates, that his teammates went back at him, but all of that was kind of edited out of the documentary, if you want to call it a documentary.
So he's saying in this, Ryan, that the, you know, Jordan coming off the way that he did and how he went back at teammates, that teammates went back at MJ, but they cut that out. Is that how I'm understanding that?
I think so.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that for a second.
And, you know, there's not going to be a ton of footage from practices in 91, 92, 93 of him chewing out teammates.
Yeah, I mean, Steve Kerr hit him. That's what started the whole thing. I mean, Steve Kerr, he got fouled. He, you know, and Jordan even said it, that, yeah, he hit me and then I hit him. And who knows, he said, she said, whatever. But they hashed that out and worked it out, and you could tell that they had respect for each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sensing that Horace
sensing
Grant.
Sensing some jealousy?
I'm sensing jealousy because Horace Grant, now I will say that I don't think Horace Grant gets enough credit for his part in some of those championships. Now he leaves, he goes to Orlando, but Horace Grant was a big part of that. And I just don't think he gets enough credit sometimes. So I get that. I understand that he's a little upset over that. But at the same time, if you were a snitch, then just own it at this point. I mean, the evidence is kind of pointing that way. You have other people besides MJ that are saying it, so just own it at that point.
Well, Stacey King is a former teammate of theirs, both Horace Grant and MJ, and Stacey King was on Go Look and We Go this morning and said Horace Grant did not leak the info.
So there now we have somebody coming to his aid.
Yes.
And defending him.
Yes, and Stacey King said that a lot of his teammates would agree with him that Horace Grant was not the one who leaked that info to Sam Smith.
Well, Grant talked about that on ESPN 1000 about talking to Sam Smith.
That is a downright, outright, completely lie. Lie, lie, lie. And as I stated, if MJ had a grudge with me, let's settle it like, man, let's talk about it, or we can settle it another way. But yet and still, he goes out and put this lie out that I was the source behind. Sam and I have always been great friends. We're still great friends. But the sanctity of that locker room, I would never put anything personal out there. The mere fact that Sam Smith was an investigative reporter, that he had to have two sources to write a book, I guess. Why would MJ just point me out? I mean, it's only a grudge, man.
Have to have two sources, which is true. You want to confirm your info, but I hear that and it's just like grasping at straws, Ryan. I like Horace Grant. I mean, he had a nice career, but I feel like it's him and he's, I don't know. I don't know what to think about all this. I mean, bitterness and jealousy are the two things that come to mind.
Sure. And I think this is par for the course for anything of the like. When you look at the New England Patriots, I'm sure there are Patriots players that have played for Bill Belichick and played with Tom Brady that feel slighted because they felt like they did more for the team than what they ever got credit for. You know, there are going to be cases like that with any sort of great success like MJ had, like Tom Brady had, or has had. This felt inevitable that some of his teammates were going to feel like they didn't get enough credit, like they don't want to just bow down to the GOAT and MJ and let him get all the love. And like you said, he's a really good player. He was a big factor in the 91, 92, 93 three-peat for the Bulls. And, you know, it's obvious that there was some sort of grudge between those two. You know, even well before the documentary, Horace Grant wanted every piece of eliminating MJ and the Bulls back in 95 when MJ returned and the Bulls faced the Magic in the playoffs. And he relished that opportunity. You know, BJ Armstrong relished the opportunity of going up against the Bulls when the Bulls faced Charlotte in the 98 playoffs. That there are multiple cases of former teammates of MJ that didn't really appreciate everything about him. And anyone who is as great as Michael or LeBron or Tom Brady or whomever, they're gonna feel that way.
But you still want to beat him. I mean, that's the – and I get that. I mean, if you go and you play for another team and you're going up against your old team, not just an icon, not just a guy like MJ, but if you're going up against your old team, I mean, you want to beat him. You want to show him, like, hey,
but what I'm saying, but what I'm saying is there was something extra there. Like,
sure.
He had something to prove to MJ to shut him up.
Because
almost like those two didn't get along.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that if you're on the same team with somebody and you're constantly hearing how great they are, even though it's true, they are, but you're constantly hearing about it and being told, man, you get to play with MJ. I mean, he's the best of all time. And you're going, hey, you know, I'm not too bad. So, you know, it's a team. It's not just a one guy. It's a team. So I get all that. I mean, I totally understand that. It happens all the time, and a lot of guys use that as motivation. But it just Horace Grant's not coming off looking good in this situation. I agree with him that if there was some sort of grudge between he and MJ, that they should have settled it like men and talked it out. But it goes both ways. You know, he's going around on radio and hashing out his problems. So I think that if there was something in that documentary that he didn't like, he should have picked up the phone and called MJ. That's just how I feel about it. But it makes great radio and discussion for us. So I guess at the same time, I should be happy. But that's just – I think Horace Grant looks – just doesn't look good in this situation. That's how I feel.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's trying to defend himself, man. I mean, if you're getting called the snitch out here, man, you got to speak up for yourself. So you just – you know, you can't make those claims and then don't expect people to react to it. So – I mean, Horace was, and that's just some of the stuff Horace was saying. He even threatened to like meet up with Jordan man to man. But it's one of those things that, look, man, if you're going to make a claim like that and say that I was a snitch or whatever, then I'm going to have to defend myself. And I think that's all Horace is doing. I think everybody's blowing it up like it's like, oh, Horace is bitter and he just doesn't like Jordan. He always, because they said in the documentary, he wanted to be the guy. He wanted to be the focus. And I don't even think it's just that. I think it's mostly him just defending himself. Because if you're out here making claims about me, I have to speak up for myself. I have to defend myself. So I think that's what he's doing.
Chip Walters will join us in the final segment of the show for something that MTSU will be doing later on today. But when we come back, the Two-Tone Blue, are they better? We'll do a position-by-position breakdown starting on offense when we return here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in this Friday at noon for Game 6 Remastered, chronicling the Predators' historic 2017 Western Conference title win against Anaheim. You'll hear Pete Weber's call of the biggest moments of Game 6 and exclusive insight into the Predators' memorable playoff run from the individuals that lived it. That's Game 6 Remastered this Friday at noon on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Remastered.
You like that? It's good stuff. It's the whole damn show. That's what it is. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson here with you. All right, so we move on from The Last Dance, and we move into the Tennessee Titans. And you look at this roster and how John Robinson has put it all together to this point. I think we both agree, and we've said this multiple times on the show, that it's still a work in progress. They're still tinkering with some things. Jadeveon Clowney continues to be a name that could potentially be with the Tennessee Titans when they report for training camp, whenever that's going to be. Some facilities are opening, some are not, and so who knows what that does to that whole process. I think once the facility opens, then you could see Clowney come here, visit, and get the physical, and who knows, they get it done. But we're going to look at position by position. We'll start with offense. and give our thoughts on if we truly think that this roster is better from this year to last year to this year. So let's start with the quarterback position. I'm going to sit in, and you have to think about this. Everybody listening, it's not just the starter. We're talking position, the position group overall. So
We're doing better, worse, or same.
Yes, better, worse, or same. So this is, we're starting off with a bang, in my opinion, because I have to go worse just because even though Tannehill is the starter and he's back and clearly was an improvement over what you were getting out of Mariota, you still have Mariota as the backup. So that's not a bad backup to have. And now you have Logan Woodside and Cole McDonald, and that's it. That's what you got. So I can't sit here and tell you, and I know there are a lot of unknowns. I don't know anything about Cole McDonald. I barely know anything about Logan Woodside outside of that the organization loves him. He was on the practice squad. He was in the AAF. That's all I know. I can't sit here and tell you that that position group is better overall because I still have concerns for the backup.
So you're saying it's worse?
Yes.
I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah,
because Ryan Tannehill, before he came to Tennessee, missed 24 games combined in the three seasons before coming to the Titans, and it just feels like they're banking on Tannehill to play every single game, and you have to have a security blanket that's better than Logan Woodside or Cole McDonald. We completely agree on that, and I would be disappointed if in week one, if Woodside or McDonald is the backup quarterback to Tannehill, because
so would I.
If he goes down for even a month, that could do the Titans in and take them out of the playoff race.
Yeah, and you may hear the numbers. 22 touchdowns, 4 rushing touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 201 of 286. Yeah, that's great. He did it in 10 games. Got to see it in 16. Got to see what it looks like now that the league has film on him in Arthur Smith's offense. There's a lot of unknowns there. I have faith, and I said all along, even though I tweeted Tom Brady on a daily basis, that was kind of a joke, I still said Tannehill was the one. Keep Tannehill. Go with what you know. But he's still got to prove it all over again. So, yeah, I think we're on the same page with that one, that position group is worse. Now, with running backs, we all know what Derrick Henry did last year. And was that position group? Let's just be completely honest. Deion Lewis, I forgot he was on the team at times. And any of the other guys that they had behind them. With all that said, Darrington Evans being added this year. Darrington Evans. Thank you. I think adds something that, you know, based on what I've seen, you know, from tape and talking to people, everyone's very high on him. So I don't know if you can really say that position group could get much better because of Derrick Henry, but I'm going to go slightly better just because I think they've upgraded with Evans at that backup position and having that change of pace back.
I'm going to say same because Evans is unproven, and he will bring a lot of the same traits that maybe Deion Lewis did, especially in the passing game. But until Evans proves that he's a better option for the Titans than Deion Lewis ever was, I can't say it's better, so I'm going to go same.
And that's fair. I mean, I was kind of back and forth on that one, but the point is we both feel pretty good about that position. I mean, Derrick Henry goes without saying, and then, you know, Darrington Evans, see what he can do as that backup. And then they got to have a third. You know, who knows who that's going to be whenever they figure that out. So that's how we feel about the running back position. Now, this is where it gets tricky, in my opinion, is wide receiver. A.J. Brown. All right. Rookie year. 52 catches, over 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns. Love everything you saw out of that kid. He became the go-to guy and the number one receiver on this team. No doubt in my mind. You always have to ask the question after a guy has a solid rookie year, can he do it again in his sophomore year? It's a fair question. But the other part of it is Corey Davis. Corey Davis regressed. 43 catches, 601 yards, only 2 touchdowns. And he has not been a touchdown machine in his career. You can say that he hasn't lived up to the 5th overall pick. He hasn't. But you still need him to be somewhat productive and better than 601 yards, in my opinion. Agree?
Yep.
Agree. Okay. So he's back. Tajae Sharpe is gone. And Tajae Sharpe was a nice piece. He wasn't the piece. He wasn't an every down guy. He wasn't somebody that you really depended on, you know, each and every play. But he was a nice piece. He was a good filling guy. When Adam Humphries went down with injury, he came in and helped you out. He's gone. You didn't really replace that. Adam Humphries he had an injury last year, so he missed some time. I'm a little concerned at the receiver group overall. So I'm leaning worse. I'm leaning that you haven't added a lot to it to try and make it better, even though we know that AJ Brown is the guy.
I would say worse as well, but I have a feeling by the time the season starts, they will have added a veteran to that group to essentially do what Tajae Sharpe did. And I believe by week one, we are saying that position is the same.
Is the same. And I'd be okay with
it. By week one.
Yeah.
Today, it's slightly worse, but by week one, I think it's going to be the same.
Now, do we think, and we wouldn't know this answer. I mean, we might know it watching the preseason. Do we think that Corey Davis is going to go into this, it's a contract year, and he's going to ball out? And we're going to see all the things with Corey Davis that we wish that we have seen up until this point.
I guess it's possible, but I don't trust him to do that. Because I don't think anyone can really trust him to stay healthy. It was clear that he did not have the same chemistry with Ryan Tannehill than he did with Marcus Mariota. So I'm not going to sit here and bank on that, no.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. All right, the tight end group now. Delanie Walker is gone. He has moved on, and he wasn't really much of a factor last year. At the beginning of the season, there was a lot of hope. He was coming off a horrific injury. It looked like, all right, Delanie's back. He's going to be a big part of this offense, and it never clicked, and he couldn't get healthy. And so Jonnu Smith ends up taking over around the same time that Tannehill took over, and you instantly saw the chemistry with those two. He had 35 catches, 439 yards, 3 touchdowns. Also could run the ball. We saw some plays where they ran Jonnu Smith. I really liked what I saw with him. Now you're going to add to his workload. He's going to be the go-to guy. Plus, of course, you have Michael Pruitt, Anthony Firkser, and Anthony Firkser was another one that really came on towards the end of the season. Teron Davenport always calls him sticky fingers, and you saw that with him. So I like the tight end group as a whole. I'm going to say the same because I can't say that you got better losing Delanie Walker, even though Delanie Walker was a shell of his former self. So I'm going to say the same.
I'm saying the same too, but I don't really factor in the loss of Delanie Walker because he wasn't really a part of that group with Ryan Tannehill.
True. True.
I mean, he was not a factor once Ryan Tannehill took over. In fact, I don't know if Delanie Walker caught one pass from Ryan Tannehill. So
no, he didn't because he went out in the Denver game.
Exactly. So, look, all we've seen in this offense with Ryan Tannehill is Jonnu Smith being the number one tight end in terms of, you know, being the number one target. So plus Delanie Walker played like 2 snaps the season prior. So he hasn't been a big factor for sure. This Titans offense in the last 2 years. You know, I don't really factor that into the conversation with tight ends. And unfortunately, no offense to Delanie, but you know, I go same as well. I think it's an above average group. They fit what the Titans need out of that group. And, you know, hopefully Jonnu Smith in a rookie year can take another step. And potentially with Jonnu and Ryan Tannehill spending time together in Florida this offseason, perhaps those two are going to have a lot of chemistry carry over into the 2020 season.
And now the offensive line, the position group that was discussed a lot going into the draft, what would they do there? Jack Conklin is gone. He has left and gone to Cleveland as a free agent, so you take him out. But Dennis Kelly remains. But the idea is Dennis Kelly is going to be the starter to begin the season. And Dennis Kelly has always been a Swiss Army knife. So they don't have him in that role. Right now he's going to be the starter. They draft Isaiah Wilson in the first round with their first pick. The hope is that he slides in as the starting right tackle at some point, but we don't know the timetable on that. As for the rest of the offensive line, Taylor Lewan, he's back. Roger Saffold, he's back. Ben Jones, back. Nate Davis, who took the job as right guard at last year, had to grow into it, had to battle some injuries early on, and that set him back. But towards the end of the year, you could tell that he was growing into that role, and the hope is that he continues to do that even more. But I do wonder, he got used to having Jack Conklin next to him. Now he's got to learn another right tackle. So what kind of learning curve is that going to be? I'm going to say the same, but...
How is it the same? You lost Jack Conklin. It's worse.
So you're saying
worse. The offensive line is worse.
I thought that that's where you were going to go. That's why I was very hesitant in saying the same. I guess I am putting a ton of faith in Dennis Kelly. And as I hear myself say that, it scares me. But I do believe that Dennis Kelly can be the stopgap, to fill that role before Isaiah Wilson is ready.
For the 2020 season, Dennis Kelly is not Jack Conklin, and Isaiah Wilson is not Jack Conklin. That offensive line.
That's a fact, yes.
Because of the Conklin loss, right tackle is worse, and nothing changed on the rest of the offensive line. So it's worse.
So you say worse across the board, even though I know that the tackles are anchor pieces, and Jack Conklin was an anchor on that offensive line, but the offensive line as a whole, in my opinion, got better, and Dennis Kelly was still in that mix. So I'm gonna stick with my answer of the same.
You're not making much sense, Chase.
Thank you.
Because when we're looking at the offensive line as a group, yes, Lewan is great at left tackle. Saffold is solid. Ben Jones is solid. We feel okay about Nate Davis at right guard.
I think he'll have a better year.
But Jack Conklin was really solid last year. He was absolutely dependable, where now we look back and wish John Robinson had picked up that fifth-year option. And the fact that you lost Conklin and you're replacing him with Dennis Kelly, which he is a better Swiss Army knife than he is a starting right tackle, and you're bringing in a rookie. There's no way, even though it's one of five that is bringing the group down, that's reality. The offensive line is worse. I just don't know how we can sit here and say it's the same.
Well, you're entitled to your opinion, and I'm entitled to mine. So that's what I'm going to say. I have all the faith in Isaiah Wilson and Dennis Kelly, and we will see who is right come training camp.
You cray-cray.
I know. I've been told that before. So there you go. That's the offensive breakdown for the Tennessee Titans position by position. When we come back here on the Rundown, we'll look at the defense. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let's toast the heroes in our community. Submit your local hero today. Just text us at 615-737-1025. Connect with us on social media or visit thegamenashville.com and tell us about your heroes. Then join Jared and Floyd at 4 p.m. each weekday as we raise a toast to our heroes. Thank you for your sacrifice. You're the definition of true royalty. Cheers, Crown Royal. Must be 21 or older to toast. Please drink responsibly. Welcome back into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McKay, Ryan Porath, and Marquise Munson is at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Speaking of our text line at 615-737-1025, you give us your thoughts on the Titans and whether you think they are better or not, position by position. You know, is there a position group that you're worried about? Is there a position group that you feel like they've done the best job at and improving? Ben says backup running back is hopefully better. Still unproven, so it's a wash for now. All the draft picks and free agency pickups for other positions are either downgrades or will take them time to develop, which doesn't help us in the current window. Jeffrey Simmons taking a huge leap is all I'm hoping for. So that's what Ben says on our text line at 615-737-1025. Very fair. Dennis Kelly also has very nice hair, so I just wanted to point that out.
Dennis Kelly's hair makes him look like he hasn't showered since the start of quarantine.
I hope he heard you say that, because I don't think that's true. He looks like The Undertaker. All right, defense.
He looks like he plays for the San Francisco Giants because every player on the San Francisco Giants looks like they haven't showered in a week.
What do you got against Dennis Kelly?
Come I have on, nothing man. Against Dennis Kelly. He is a really good Swiss Army knife. But when you're the starting right tackle, you're not a Swiss Army knife.
You're not. That is correct. You're the starting right tackle. All right, can we talk defense now?
Let's talk defense.
Can we talk defense? All right, defensive line. Jarrell Casey gets traded away. I can't say you got better. You got worse. I can't say that. I have questions about the defensive line and just how I'm looking at unofficial depth charts right now. I've pulled those up before the show, and some have Jack Crawford as the starting defensive tackle. I mean, Jeffrey Simmons, yeah. The hope is he's going to have a breakout year, and he has the full offseason to train and full training camp. You know, he's recovered from the injury. But you got rid of Jarrell Casey. So I have some concerns. I say worse on the defensive line.
I say worse with the caveat of if we're having this discussion in January or February and we're looking back on the Titans season and saying, was the defensive line better, worse, or the same in 2020 than it was in 2019? I think we're going to say it was the same. With all due respect to Jarrell Casey, I have a feeling that Jeffrey Simmons is going to have a monster 2020. But when you look at it on paper going into the year, he's still a little bit of a question mark because you don't know what kind of leap he will take from 2019 to 2020. So going into the season, I would say slightly worse. But I have a feeling that position is not going to be a weakness on the defense this year.
Yeah, well, we will see. I hope it's a big year for Jeffrey Simmons. I'd love to see that. And I want to see what he and Daquan Jones can do working together. Daquan Jones has always been one of those just lunch pail, go to work guys that I don't think it's enough credit, but I've always liked him as a player, so we'll see there. Now, linebackers, do you want to do this by outside linebacker and inside linebacker,
yes,
or all just as one? Okay.
Yes.
So we'll start with outside linebacker. And this is where you come into pass rush. You know, if they add Clowney, you're going to say they got better. I mean, you're going to, in wherever they line him up, but you're going to say the pass rush got better. But outside linebacker, Vic Beasley, I have no idea what he's going to be. I'm going to say the same.
I think it's pretty safe to say Vic Beasley is going to be more productive than Cameron Wake.
Yes.
So I say it's slightly better.
Slightly better.
Slightly better, not better enough, but slightly better because Cameron Wake didn't really add all that much to the pass rush last year. Vic Beasley, you at least hope on a one-year prove-it deal that he can sniff 10 sacks, that he can get up to 7, 8, or 9, maybe even double digits. So I say it is slightly better.
Okay. I can not push too hard on that to say that it is slightly better. I'm leaning towards the same because I don't know what he's going to be. Now, I will say the depth is there. Kamala Correa is back. Reggie Gilbert is here, you know, again, going to be full year, full training camp. He was acquired via trade in camp last year, so we'll see what those depth pieces look like.
Well, and DeAndre Walker could be, yeah, a little bit of icing on the cake and be a nice depth piece. We just don't know because he was hurt all last year as a fifth-round pick out of Georgia.
Derek Roberson was a nice depth piece,
yep,
that was an undrafted guy last year. So there you go with that group. Now, on the inside, that Rashawn Evans is back, Jayon Brown is back, David Long was another one of those depth pieces. It was a draft pick that really came on nicely towards the end of the season, but there wasn't all that much change with that position, so I'll say the same.
Well, they do lose Wesley Woodyard.
They do lose the lumberjack, but he did, what kind of role was he really playing towards the end of the year?
I agree with you. I don't view him to the extent that I described Delanie Walker last segment. But I think his expectations for 2020 would have been pretty low. I mean, at that point, if he was back on the roster, you would have just expected him to kind of be a locker room leader more than anything else. So,
and I'd love to have him for that because they've lost that. That's one area when you just look at locker room leaders, that I think they've gotten worse because they've lost a lot. I mean, they've lost those guys.
Sure. So I'll agree with you from a production standpoint that the inside linebackers from last year to this year, the emergence of David Long late in the year, I thought was a positive. So I'll say the inside linebackers are barely the same.
All right. Secondary, cornerback. Lose Logan Ryan, lost some depth pieces. You have added Christian Fulton via the draft. You've added Jonathan Joseph. But Ryan, I'm going to say worse. Logan Ryan was a huge part of that group, and he's not back. Now, the hope is going to be that Christian Fulton can grow into that role, but you're asking a lot out of a rookie, a second-round pick. Who knows what he's going to have his first year, and who knows what Jonathan Joseph still has left in the tank. So I couldn't make a case to say they're better, and I can't really make a case to say they're the same. I have to say that they're a little bit worse.
I think you can make the case for them being the same in this realm, that they are spending less on corner than they would have if they brought back Logan Ryan. And you might get similar production in Mike Vrabel's defense out of Jonathan Joseph and Christian Fulton than you would have gotten out of Logan Ryan. Because Logan Ryan, he's lost a step. So I think you can make the case for it being the same when you look at bang for the buck.
So is that what you're saying? They're the same?
I'm saying slightly worse.
Slightly worse.
On paper, slightly worse, but they're spending less. So I do like that. Plus, Jonathan Joseph knows Mike Vrabel very well. I think we're going to look back on that signing as being a shrewd pickup by John Robinson. I really do.
Now, that's interesting. We're going to save this and bring that up because I hope you're right.
I don't think it's as worse off as you're making it out to be. Let me put that way.
And you do bring up a good point that he's reunited with Vrabel. They know each other, and this is Vrabel's defense. Even though we've talked to some people this week that feel like that it's not going to change all that much with from Vrabel to Dean Pease. So I am we'll see how Jonathan Joseph can slide into that. Go ahead.
I'll also say that the fourth corner, that spot got better from LaShawn Sims.
Yeah, LaShawn Sims.
I was never a LaShawn Sims guy. No, I was never a fan of his. He had a couple, three, four, maybe good games, but the fact that they're 3-4 is now Christian Fulton and Jonathan Joseph, it might be just a tad deeper, even though you're losing someone that was as valuable as Logan Ryan was for the 3 years that he was here.
Safety position, the same. I mean, there are no changes at safety. You got everybody back in that room. I think they're the same, and I think they're solid. Yep. Kicker?
who in the world knows? But I will say this. They are not going to be able to get through this season with – just they didn't make a field goal for like the last 2 months of the year, right?
I mean, yeah, they didn't have to,
right? But they're not gonna survive that way. At some point this season, in some key games, they're gonna need a reliable field goal kicker, and who the hell knows if Greg Joseph is that guy or not.
Yeah, we will see, and they brought in Tucker McCann, an undrafted free agent. I guess there's a kicking battle, but I would assume Greg Joseph is the guy week one. Real quick before we get to the break, Cedric wants to weigh in fast on the offensive line. Cedric, welcome in. Go ahead, Cedric. Nope.
Hey, listen, man, I think if you look back 12 months ago, the Titans offensive line is way better. Taylor Lewan was out to start the year. You had Dennis Kelly filling in for him. You had Nate Davis, who you didn't know what he was going to be. And Jack Conklin was coming off a terrible year to start going into last season. Now you've got that whole group back. You've got Dennis Kelly filling in for Jack Conklin. We're in a much better position on the O-line to start the year compared to where we were last year. Not to mention, we've got a true leader at quarterback that's going to get those guys in the right position.
That's a fair point, Cedric, but that wasn't the question. I mean, that's it's from the end of last year.
Yeah. But he is right that they don't have – I mean, they have one question mark on the offensive line, in my opinion, and that is the right tackle. That's really it. I mean, everything else is pretty much set. Now, if injuries happen, then okay, you can maybe say the Swiss Army knife is a question, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, the right tackle is really the only one that everybody wants to know, okay, can they continue that momentum at that position with Jack Conklin leaving? So
here is my biggest worry about this entire conversation that we just had in the last two segments. How many more times we said they are either slightly worse or worse off at single positions than we did say that they are better. Mm-hmm. And I am cautioning myself on this Titans season because the playoff run was phenomenal, but they have still gone 9-7 each of the last 4 years. And on paper, right now, as we sit here on May 20th, they aren't to the same level. They aren't as deep as they were in the playoffs. So I think to just simply snap a finger and expect them to go 10-6 or 11-5 just because of the playoff run, I think that's misguided.
Yeah, that's dangerous to think that.
It is a very dangerous thought to have with this Titans team.
So there you go. There's our position-by-position breakdown. I'm sure we will do this again in the near future, and it might change. Who knows? Especially if the Titans make a signing that we're all hoping that they do. When we come back, we'll talk to Chip Walters. He is the play-by-play man for the MTSU Blue Raiders. We'll do that next. ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, get your voting fingers ready. Help us decide who you think has the best baseball jersey in our uniform drawing contest. The winner will receive a personalized Nashville Sounds jersey, courtesy of your Nashville Sounds. You can vote at the 102.5 The Game Twitter page or the Game Nashville Facebook page. Cast your vote now in our uniform contest. Welcome back into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth. We say hello to our buddy Chip Walters. He is the fine play-by-play man of the MTSU Blue Raiders. Chip, how are you?
Doing well, guys. How about yourself?
Doing all right. Just, 2.5 months into working from home and not seeing a lot of people. I mean, this is the new normal, as they say.
Yeah, I'm not willing to cave in on that just yet. I'm looking for more of the old normal. I hope we get to that here pretty soon. But, yep, we all do what we have to do right now, for sure.
Yeah, and I know we're all hoping that when we get to football season that the Blue Raider fans are able to pack Floyd Stadium and actually watch their guys in person. But a lot of unknowns with that right now. But something cool that you guys are going to be doing today at noon on Zoom, moving forward with football, it'll feature Athletics Director Chris Massaro and the head coach Rick Stockstill.
Yeah, we've all gotten used to the Zoom meetings, and this will be a Zoom webinar, so you don't have to worry about, are people going to hear my dog barking in the background or whatever. You go on as a webinar attendee, and there's a link on GoBlueRaiders.com. You can find it pretty much anywhere on social media today. They put it out this morning. You don't have to have the Zoom app or anything. Just be on your laptop at noon, grab a sandwich, eat at your desk or at home or wherever, and just click on that link, and it'll take you right to the webinar. You can pre-ask questions if you'd like. Send in your questions, and we've already got a handful in the queue already at radio@goblueraiders.com. But this, Chase, this is an idea that Chris Massaro came to Mark Owens and Mark then to me. I'm there just to kind of keep it in the road, and these guys are going to provide all the information. Chris will have a lot of the information, as far as the depth and breadth of the whole situation. Coach Stockstill, obviously on the football side of things, will, it's really kind of cramped his style and the way he goes about his business and how they have adjusted, not only with his coaching staff on a day-to-day basis, but players, recruiting, player development, all of that. And so today's webinar is a chance for Chris and Rick to just kind of, answer questions, as best they can. And just kind of be open about their thoughts, and fans can have that chance to have that kind of one-on-one connection, and ask, you know, there are no bad questions. It's, you know, everything as simple as, you know, are you filling the Coke machines or Pepsi machines and or all the way to what is scheduling going to look like? Not only in football, today will be football centric, but, you know, all sports are going to be involved in this, especially in a league like Conference USA that runs from El Paso to Norfolk to Miami and all points in between. You know, travel is a huge concern and a huge cost. So, and everybody's looking to find ways to trim budgets through that kind of thing without resorting to what we're seeing at some schools like Bowling Green and Furman, who have knocked off some sports already, and nobody wants to see that.
Chip Walters is with us here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Chip, we've spent a lot of time going down memory lane here in the last couple months as, you know, COVID put a pause to sports as a whole. And unfortunately, we didn't get the NCAA tournament this calendar year. And when we have the NCAA tournament, we always have, you know, memorable upsets. And obviously the most memorable upset in this region was MTSU as a 15 seed knocking off Michigan State, a 2 seed, just a few years back. When you look back on that game for the Blue Raiders, you know, what's going to be kind of your lasting memory of that upset for Middle?
Well, I mean, if you think about, was there the, I think the signature play in the game was at the end, the icing on the cake with Middle gets the ball. The ball never touched the floor, and Reggie Upshaw had a dunk on the other end, which kind of capped things off. But to me, jumping out to a 15-0 lead on a really, really good Michigan State team, you know, that it will be a lasting memory. And you know, it's kind of hard. A lot of times it's, you know, I think about different parts of the game. But to me, the things that will stick with me are being in the team dinner room, you know, when we got back to the hotel and being part of the media crush that came down on them over the next 48 hours and the social media explosion that happened, you know, during and after the game. And I was a student at Middle in 1982 when we beat Kentucky, and that was in the NCAA, and that was obviously a huge deal, and I never thought it would be topped, but it was, and the amount of, you know, everybody knowing what was going on, it was a perfect storm. Friday afternoon game, the national game on CBS, and it was just incredible, and you guys were a big part of it as well.
Chip Walters, the voice of the Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders, here with us on the Rundown. Chris, or Chip, we appreciate the time. Just gave you your athletics director name.
That's right.
Join us, join you guys today at noon on Zoom for a webinar. It'll be Chris Massaro, the AD, and Rick Stockstill, the football coach. That's going to be fun to maybe get some questions answered, and people can connect with the AD and the football coach. So we'll be watching at noon.
That's right. It'll be on, the link is on GoBlueRaiders.com and basically every other social media outlet for the athletic department this morning.
All right, Chip. Have a great day. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Chip.
Chip Walters, the voice of the Middle Tennessee State Blue Raiders. That's going to do it for us. That is a good way to end it. Talking a little Blue Raider football, some college football. I need it in my life, Ryan, but hopefully we will have it.
We need sports in our life.
I know. Need sports. Well, I got NASCAR later on today if the rain cooperates, so. Yeah, I can watch a little racing tonight, so that'll be good for me. Another one from Darlington. That's going to do it for today's edition of The Rundown, but stick around. Darren Donick and Chase, Jerry Stackhouse at noon today. That is next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.